Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week, we'll be talking with Paul Willis, Executive Director of the Saints and Sinners Literary Festival, along with mystery novelist Greg Heron. We'll also talk with actress-turned-short story writer Diane Ladd, and we'll take a look back at World Book Night. Saints and Sinners is the literary festival for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered writers, readers, friends, book lovers. It's celebrating a big milestone this year, 10 years, which is a long time for any literary festival to endure. Today we have with us Paul Willis, who's the executive director of Saints and Sinners, along with his partner, New Orleans mystery writer Greg Heron, a longtime Saints and Sinners participant of the Sinner variety, I would suppose, and Greg's new book is The Dead Housewives of New Orleans, which I love. That's one of the best titles ever. So welcome back to The Reading Life, Paul.
Thank you, Susan. I'm glad to be here.
You too, Greg.
Always a pleasure, Susan.
So, Paul, 10 years. This is huge. Tell us how Saints and Sinners got started in the first place.
Well, in the year 2000, Greg and I were living in Washington, D.C. Greg was the editor for the Lambda Book Report, and I was working for the foundation and had worked on putting together an LGBT writers' conference in Philadelphia that was called Behind Our Masks. The title of the event was not my idea, so I pretty much really like Saints and Sinners, the new name here. And in the year that we had lived in D.C., we had met a lot of great writers and working on the Greg with the book report and myself working on the conference, but we had really missed New Orleans. Greg got a two-book deal. As soon as he got his advance, we hightailed it back to the city that we loved. And after being here for a couple of years, we decided that this was the perfect place to have a similar type of event. We met with our good friend Jean Redmond, who's a mystery writer as well as a director at the No AIDS Task Force. She came up with the name Saints and Sinners, and we went from there, and the first event took place in 2003.
It's amazing, isn't it? It just seems like yesterday to me. Tell us some of the highlights, because there have been some remarkable events and some remarkable writers who've come here in the past 10 years.
One of the highlights for me was just the very initial first year to see how many people wanted to support the event, as well as the French Quarter of New Orleans wasn't a hard sell to talk people into coming here. We established one of the goals of the event was to recognize writers in the field, and we had started a Saints and Sinners Literary Hall of Fame. And that first year, four of the authors that came and participated in the event and were inducted into our Hall of Fame was Dorothy Allison, Catherine Forrest, Felice Picano, and Patricia Nell Warren. So it was quite a treat to get to see them again and meet some of them for the first time. Another highlight to me was in 2006, the festival after Katrina, to see how many people wanted to support the city, made sure that they came that year. And we got a great event that came together featuring Michael Cunningham and Jake Shears from the Scissor Sisters. And somebody put together, it was an erotic circus maximus party at an uptown home, and there were fire eaters, and they're probably still trying to get glitter out of their floorboards.
Oh, most New Orleans homes have glitter in the floorboards.
Yours for sure.
But that was pretty amazing, wasn't it, that comeback?
It sure was. And another highlight in 2010, we launched a short fiction contest, and how that's evolved is each year we pick a winner, two runners up, and 10 finalists, and we put it together and create an anthology and have a book launch party at the festival itself. So this year on the Thursday night, May 23rd, we'll be kicking off the weekend with a book launch party fundraiser, which in part goes to help the programs of the No AIDS Task Force.
And it's a great thing because then everybody's so invested in the book and in each other. It's a really wonderful way to show support. So, Greg, why do you keep coming back to Saints and Sinners? What do you get out of it?
Writers always kind of create in a void or a vacuum, and you generally don't come into contact with many other writers and or the opportunity to talk to other people who do the same kind of work as you do, or readers, or get that kind of feedback. And it's very re-energizing to be around those kinds of discussions and other people who can relate to what it's like to sit down in front of the keyboard and figure out what you're going to do next. And it's a lot of fun. I've made some really good friends through the event, made some enemies, don't care so much about them. I would really recommend that anybody who really enjoys or is interested in being a writer, the programming is really quite top-notch, and you can learn a lot from just coming to the panels. It just because all the writers are gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered, the discussions about writing and literature cross all genres and boundaries, and you can get something out of it regardless.
Now, the other thing I think people get out of this, Greg, is that things are changing so quickly in publishing. And LGBT writers have a really good network of small publishers who work with them. And don't you think that networking is as important as anything that goes on here?
Networking is incredibly important. I know any number of people who've come to Saints and Sinners as wannabe writers who've gotten book contracts or met publishers or editors who've eventually worked with them and published their work. I know in my work as an editor, I have met people at Saints and Sinners and talked to them and that I've eventually published. People are always looking for the great secret to getting published, and really it's all about going to events and meeting people and making yourself known and making those kinds of contacts. It's much more likely that someone's going to read your work over the transom if they know who you are or they recognize your name than if you're a total stranger.
Exactly.
It makes a huge, huge, huge difference. My entire career has been based on being in the right place at the right time and meeting the right person.
Now, Paul, what are you particularly looking forward to this year?
Of course, I'm looking forward to the mystery panel and young adult panel that Greg Herron will be featured on.
But of course.
I'm also looking forward to anything that Sassafras Lowry is on, just because I love saying her name. I think it's one of the best names in the program. But I'm especially looking forward to a panel that's kind of closing the event on Sunday, looking at LGBT literature past and present with like four literary icons, including Dorothy Allison, Felice Pacano, Andrew Halloran, and Val McDermid. I just think it will be great to hear them talk about the evolution they've seen since they started writing and what trends they see moving forward.
It has been a long time that we've been having this literature, and there have been some amazing changes. And as far as I'm concerned, anytime you have a chance to see Dorothy and Val is a great thing to do anyway. Now, Greg, you're a community specialist with the No AIDS Task Force. How do these two things work together for you?
It helps in getting the word out. We think that No AIDS is pretty well known in New Orleans, but it's still amazing to me how many people don't know how important it is to come in and get tested, or the value of knowing your status, or what can and cannot put you at risk. I'm constantly amazed in my work every day at the office what people don't know when they come in and the questions that I get asked. There are people to this day who still believe that you can become infected by kissing someone who's infected.
Wow.
And we're 30 years into the epidemic. You think that by now everyone knows everything there is to know. It's astonishing what misinformation is still out there.
And the relationship with No AIDS also in that the event is evolved where it's a program of the Tennessee Williams Literary Festival, but part of the proceeds goes to benefit the programs of No AIDS. And one of the panels that we're doing this year related to what Greg is saying is looking at the topic of AIDS is still with us and how we still need to tell an essential story and how the writing about HIV and AIDS has evolved over the years as well.
Right. And that's an important topic.
Because there's so many people, young men now, that weren't even born at the time of the height of the AIDS crisis and don't really pay attention. So,
well, I can't wait. I hope you get a great audience for this event. 10 years is really something to celebrate. And for more information, you can check out sasfest.org. And there are special deals for the local audience. So join us at the Hotel Monteleone for Saints and Sinners, Thursday, May 23rd through 26th. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, Susan.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you, Susan.
Diane Ladd is an award-winning actress, writer, director, and healer, which makes for a complicated and very interesting life, as we're about to hear. She's the author of two books, Spiraling Through Life, A Mental, Physical, and Spiritual Discovery, and a collection of short stories, A Bad Afternoon for a Piece of Cake. She and her ex-husband, Bruce Dern, and daughter, Laura Dern, were the first family to receive all three stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And Diane and Laura were the first mother and daughter to be nominated for Academy Awards during the same year. So you love her as an actress, and now you can know her as a writer. Diane, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thank you, Susan, very, very much.
Now, you come by your acting and writing chops, honestly, for your cousin is one of America's, and New Orleans, of course, most famous writers.
Yeah, Tennessee Williams. And the first play I ever did was in New York. I mean, the first professional play for him, actually. It was his magnificent play, Orpheus Descending. And I guess we brought each other luck because he said he'd been trying to make that one play a hit for over 20 years. And it was an incredible hit. We did it off-Broadway, and it ran for over a year. I was 17 when I began it and turned 18, and Bruce Dern came and replaced an actor in the play about midway, and I met him, fell in love, and we got married.
So what a life-changing thing.
Yeah, it was a big life-changing thing.
We have to get you here for the Tennessee Williams Festival some year.
Yeah, that would be fun. You know, New Orleans is my old stomping ground.
Oh, I know. You're just across the state line when you were growing up, right?
Yeah, I was born in Mississippi. Daddy was a veterinarian, and I traveled through five states with him for his products. He was beloved by farmers. You can't exactly at a Hollywood party talk about Carl Rupp's sorehead and white diarrhea, can you?
No.
Kind of be odd man out. But traveling with my father, Susan, I saw a lot of kids forget the TV. They didn't even have a radio. We weren't rich. I was middle class and saw both sides of the scope. And I promised God then that if he would help me be successful, I would help these people. And I've tried to do that. I have a 501c3 that fights for education for kids. And that first book you mentioned, Spiraling Through the School of Life,
if they go
to my website, dianeladd.com, they can order that, and the money goes to Fight for Education and Help Kids. The second book, come on, everybody, please help me make this on the bestseller list. It's called A Bad Afternoon for a Piece of Cake, and you can get it on Amazon. You can get it from Inkwell Publishers, the publishing company. Or you can get it again on my website, I think, in the store.
Well, it is one of the most wonderful titles for a book I've ever heard. But tell me, so your first book was so revelatory and so deeply honest and searching, and I can see how that flowed directly from your life. What made you turn to fiction? What made you think of doing short stories?
Well, I've been writing, Susan, since I was 18. The late, great Patty Chayefsky in New York City and his wife, Mary, were very kind to me. He was my mentor, and he encouraged me greatly with the writing, but the acting is what paid the rent. And when you become successful as an actress, then people would say, oh, don't read her script. She's just an actress. They didn't want to open up the possibility that you could have more than one gift. And the whole trip is about using the gifts God gave us. So I felt like Thomas Wolfe. I just kept writing since I was 17, and everything is in my attic. I was waiting for my Max Perkins, which is the editor that discovered all his writings and helped him get them published. And this publisher came along, Inkwell, and said, we hear you've got a lot of writing and that you're a great short story writer. Could we do 10 of your short stories? So they talked me into it. They put the book together. And then, unbeknownst to me, they sent it to Rex Reed, the great critic. And he compared me to the writers that I admire so much, the greatest ones, a Truman Capote, and Flannery O'Connor, Eudora Welty, Carson McCullers, and to my own cousin, Tom, to Tennessee Williams.
Well, that gives you inspiration to keep on going, doesn't it?
You better believe it. If I get knocked down in this industry, I can pick that up and clutch it to my bosom forever and a day.
Well, three of the most memorable stories in this book all involve a small family with a mother, a father, and a daughter named Moment. I love that name. I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about that family and what drew you to write about them.
I can't tell you what draws me to write about anyone, except that the Tadpole Tag story does have a little bit of my own mother and father in it. The rest of the stories, one of the favorites is The Orange Jacket. One of the favorites is One's Own Kind, which has to do about war and us. And these stories that come to me just from the collective consciousness, I guess, or from the universal mind. The first book that I had written was a social sharing. I had had some problems in my own life and pain, and I shared it to help inspire others. The book was endorsed by Wayne Dyer, the great doctor, and Dean Ornish, the great five great doctors. And one of them had said, this extraordinary story might not only change your life, it may even help save your life. And because of this first miracle in my life, I ended up lecturing a lot with doctors. And I actually worked 20 years in hospitals helping doctors do healing and doing medical intuitive work because nearly all actors are high intuitives. If you stand on that stage, there's a small group in that audience that leads the audience, and it's up to you to reach them right away. All the other writing, the fiction writing, the first book is not fiction. It's a combination of many things. And I make a joke now because in order to heal in hospitals, I got ordained. Because then if you wanted me to come in and be with you or pray for you or work with you, I could do that if I'm a minister. No one could keep me from coming into you if you requested me. So I kind of make a joke now. I say I can entertain you. If it makes you sick, I might can heal you. And if that doesn't work, by golly, I can bury you. So I'm a really good friend to have.
Aren't you Reverend Rose?
Yeah.
I think that's a wonderful name.
It's my first name. It's my good luck name.
It's a lovely name.
Well, you know, in the East, the lotus is the symbol of spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
In the West, here in America, etc., actually, it is the rose.
Absolutely.
So, how about yourself? Were you born in New Orleans?
Oh, no. I've been here 27 years now, so I'm kind of acculturated, I think.
So you got there as fast as you could.
I did. Just the right time for me.
Well, you know, I love it for many reasons. I was there at 16, and then when I did the Alice TV series, I did the movie originally, Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, with Scorsese, and I got my first Oscar nomination. I created the role of Flo. So they did a TV series, and I didn't want to do the series. I wanted to go back to New York and study and keep trying to become a great actress. But then when I came back from Broadway, Polly Holiday had created the role of Flo, and they were spinning her off, and they offered me quite a bit of money. You know, art doesn't pay that kind of money.
Right.
So I created a brand new character called Belle, a country western songwriter. So I did that for CBS. But when I left, here's the payoff. Guess what? I was offered the opportunity to be queen of the August Crew Parade, 1981. That's a long time ago. I was a kid. I came down there, and they had a horse race in my honor in New Orleans, and the city officials took me to dinner, and they had this ball, 3,000 people, and I was carried out on a white tray in a Carol Lombard white silk dress. Then they deposited me on the dais as queen of the ball, and guess what, Susan?
Uh-oh, I'm afraid.
Did you see Argo, the film? Well, not the six that got away, but the others who did not get away, who were held for 444 days as prisoners. They'd just been released 2 months earlier. They were my guest of honor. The city of New Orleans had invited them. Can you believe that?
Well, when we roll out the red carpet, we roll it out all the way.
You roll out that red carpet, honey. And I was sitting there not only being honored by my cousin's streetcar named Desire, but the guest of Argo, the beautiful people that were unfortunately held prisoner for so long.
Oh, that's so incredible.
And they gave me an earful, I'll tell you that.
I think that some of the very best books that I've ever read about writing have actually been books about acting. I want to know what you think about how your acting skills translate into characters in your fiction, how you kind of focus those.
You're absolutely correct. Well, first of all, I believe in many lifetimes. I think that we come to school, we're part of God. We got his DNA in us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you can do anything you put your mind to that won't hurt others. And you have to persevere many times over and over again. Because if you're part of God, then you are a God in school, aren't you? And some people don't get past kindergarten, you know. So we have to really kick a little dirt in our life to evolve. Now, whatever you want to do, bake a cake or be an actress, I believe that I've been an actress before. I believe that my soul knows the ropes, so to speak. However, I'm a performer and a method actress, both. I've sang, I've danced, I've done stand-up comedy, everything. But my soul as a method actress has worked also hard, aside from being intuitive, with sense memories, emotional memories, studying my craft. And all that sensitivity to wonder, as I'm talking to you, where did Susan come from? Does she have black eyes like Black-Eyed Susan, like the song? What were her parents like? What is her life like? Is she going to help me in my life? Am I going to help her? Will we be friends someday? Will we have a hug in person? Where does she live? Are there trees by her house? Or is it a fast condo? All of these thoughts, it's not the answers in life sometimes. It's the questions. And if you are sensitive to other humans and you write the questions, truly it will make you a more better writer, more absorbing, more fulfilling, hopefully. So all of my training as an actress, now you take somebody like Tennessee Williams, they never had to train as an actor, but they were born with the gift of sensitivity. They were born with the gift of taking words with their paintbrush to paint a picture. So there's many gifts, but I know that my work as an actor, I started off writing, as I said, 17, the same time I started acting. But the fact that I was allowed to use my talent to make a living and to perform for people and feel their energies really helped me indeed be a better writer. Absolutely. Your question is a very profound question, perceptive question, and accurate question.
Oh, well, thanks. Well, listen, this has been so much fun. I hope everybody comes out to see you for a bad afternoon for a piece of cake. And now we can't wait for your next book. Thank you so much.
My privilege, Susan. Thank you and all good around you.
World Book Night takes place every year on April 23rd, Shakespeare's birthday. It's the night when book givers, who've signed up to give away a favorite book, hit the streets intent on spreading the love of reading. We caught up with Ame Lohmeyer, a librarian at the Norman Mayer branch of the New Orleans Public Library, and her friends who'd conceived of Books in Bars. She and fellow librarians, writers, bartenders, and artists were beginning their trek at Finn McCool's when we caught up with them. They were getting their books ready to give away, putting in bookmarks, little notes, lists of other books readers might like, and generally celebrating the project in their World Book Night t-shirts. Here's what they had to say.
I chose The Tender Bar because not only was it a great memoir, but it's also a little apropos for the situation and sort of has a special place in my heart. It was a gift I gave to a friend one birthday who's a bartender.
Jared, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've been a longtime reader and also a writer as well. And I feel that this is, you know, just a good time to just, you know, give back to the community and give them a chance to fall back in love with reading. And I chose to give away Me Talk Pretty One Day by David Sedaris, one of my favorite authors of all time. His slice of life story is just, there's always one story that, you know, connects with you in some sort of way.
That's a great choice. What's your book tonight?
It's Good Omens by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett. It's awesome. It's actually one of the first books I've read when I was little. I fell in love with it, and then ironically, years later, I fell in love with both authors separately, having forgotten who wrote the book in the first place. So I was really happy I could be handing it out to people who have never seen it before.
Hi, my name's Candy, and I love to read, and that's why I'm here. The book that I chose is Fahrenheit 451, because it's one of my all-time favorite books. And I think that it really can draw people in that possibly have never been that interested in reading. I thought it was a great book to get people to understand how important books are and how fun it can be to read. And the message of the book just seemed perfect. So that's why I picked it.
Hi, my name is Shadow Angelina. And I chose the book Salvage the Bones by Jessamine Ward. And I chose the book because it was about Hurricane Katrina. And it was about Hurricane Katrina in Mississippi. And come to find out, this book that I chose was unexpectedly beautifully written. It was very lyrical. Each page is like poetry. And not only am I really excited to be giving it away at World Book Night, but I'm also recommending it to every single one of my friends now because I'm absolutely in love with it.
My name is Zach Bartlett, and I chose to give Devil in a Blue Dress because I think it showcases the breadth of what's possible in the detective genre instead of just reading for plot's sake.
Now, you've been putting something special inside all your books, too, haven't you? What's that?
I made up little bookmarks that recommend another book to the person for if they liked Devil in a Blue Dress. You know, recommend something similar that we have in the library system, like The City and the City or Chester Himes' series. If they're not really big into reading and don't know where to go after this book, it'll give them a little head start.
And we should say that Zach is a librarian at Ladder Library.
That's right.
Hi, my name is Chris Ford. I work for the New Orleans Public Library at the main branch downtown. And I am giving away Sandra Cisneros' house on Mango Street. And I chose it because I really loved it as a kid. I think that it's important for young girls, especially girls of color, to have books that reflect their lives and that reflect the thoughts and feelings and all sorts of things that we have. And I remember identifying with it a lot. It's a kind of story that it's great to revisit as an adult, because I think as kids we think that we're going to grow up and get out of everything and everything's going to be different. But I think Esperanza learns, and the rest of us kind of do too, that you have to make the best of where you are. You have to make change where you are.
I took a more laid-back approach to World Book Night this year. My book was one of my very favorites, Alexander McCall Smith's The Number One Ladies Detective Agency. I drove around to 8 of our little free libraries located around the city and put a few in each one. My last stop was the Pinkley Little Free Library on the Soniette side of the latter branch of the New Orleans Public Library on St. Charles Avenue. This little library is named for Diana Pinkley, who loved books, especially mysteries, and especially Alexander McCall Smith's. It was a treat to put those books on the shelf, imagining who would come along and read them next, imagining how Pinkley would enjoy seeing those books on the shelf, imagining the next reader coming along. So think about being a book giver next year. It's a blast. For more information, check out worldbooknight.org. Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Bill Lofelm signs The Devil in Her Way, Tuesday, May 21st at 6 at Octavia Books. Charles Finch signs the most recent Charles Lennox mystery, A Death in the Small Hours, Thursday, May 23rd at 6 p.m. at Maple Street Bookshop on Maple Street. Young adult novelist Claudia Gray signs Spellcaster, Thursday, May 23rd at 6 at Octavia Books. Megan Kaminsky and Jonathan Brown are the featured readers in the 17 Poets Literary and Performance Series, Thursday, May 23rd at 8 at the Goldmine Saloon. Brock Boutte signs Grigri and the Cypress Tree, Saturday, May 25th at 3 p.m. at Barnes & Noble Metairie. There will be a Memorial Day open mic reading, Sunday, May 26th at 3 p.m. at the Maple Leaf Bar. And today's guests, Paul Willis and Greg Heron, will be appearing at the Saints and Sinners Literary Festival. That's for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered writers, readers, and book lovers. It takes place May 23rd through 26th at the Hotel Monteleone. Watch for great writers like Dorothy Allison, Bernard Cooper, Felice Picano, Justin Torres, and many others who'll be presenting their work. Check out sasfest.org for information. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. Or you can email us anytime at thereadinglife@wwno.org. I'm Susan Larson. Thanks for listening, and keep reading.